Good morning, everyone. My name's Nina, and I'll be reading the poem this morning. Me and my little jail cell from a youth detention center, anonymous. I have no life, no parents to please, no friends to tease. It's just me and my little jail cell. I have paper and pen, but no one to send my love to. It's just me and my little jail cell. The only life I have is a jail life, which in fact is no life at all. I have no one to love, no one to hug, no one to say goodnight to. All I have is me and my little jail cell.
My name is Cameron. I'm reading this morning's scripture reading out of Matthew chapter 11, verses 2 through 11. When John heard in prison that the Messiah was doing what the Messiah was doing, he sent word by his disciples and said to him, "Are you the one who is to come, or are we to wait for another?" Jesus answered them, "Go and tell John what you hear and see. Those who cannot see receive their sight. Those who cannot walk, walk. Those with the skin disease are restored. Those who cannot hear, hear. The dead are raised, and the poor have good news brought to them. And blessed is anyone who takes no offense at me." As they went away, Jesus began to speak to the crowds about John. "What did you go out into the wilderness to look at? A reed shaken by the wind? What then did you go out and see, to see? Someone dressed in soft robes? Look, those who wear soft robes are in royal palaces. What then did you go out to see? A prophet? Yes, I tell you, and more than a prophet. This is the one about whom it is written, 'See, I am sending my messenger ahead of you, who will prepare your way before you.' Truly I tell you, among those born of women, no one has arisen greater than John the Baptist, and yet the least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he."
All right. Well, my name is Molly Rose, and I'm our Minister of Christian Life and Formation. I am glad to be with you this morning. If you have noticed anything I do with Worship and Wonder, I love to start with a story, so I'm going to do the same thing today. When I was in my 20s, I spent about 2 years as a glorified cab driver. I was a Lyft driver, I was a rideshare driver. I don't want to brag, but I will. I had a 4.9 star rating that I'm very proud of. Feels like one of my greatest accomplishments, other than my 8-year committed relationship with my therapist. Shout out to Alyssa, she's the best. But I drove all sorts of people, and you know this if you've ever been a rideshare driver also. I drove the founder of Four Loko. I drove little grandmas who tipped me $20 bills. They would always say, "Don't spend it all in one place." I was like, "Do you know the economy right now? I'm probably gonna have to." I would drive kids to school sometimes, which was very trusting of their parents. Once I drove this couple through PB, and maybe you know Pacific Beach, but they were either hungover or they were still drunk. And the woman was basically backseat driving the entire time. It was a 5 to 7 minute ride, very short ride, and she was like, "Who taught you how to drive? You could have made that light. You're going so slow, right? It's a short drive." And I was like, okay, just stay calm. We finally get there. She slams my door. She storms off, and the man who's with her just stays buckled in his seat. And I'm like, what's this dude about to do? Like, I'm the type of person who doesn't have mace or pepper spray in my car because I'm the type of person who would pepper spray myself, so I don't have any protection at all. And I'm like, what's this guy gonna do? And then finally I'm like, "Sir, this is where you get out." And he says, dead serious, "She's horrible, ain't she? I wish I didn't have to go with her." I was like, well, she's not my favorite person that I've driven today. I drove a lot of different types of people. I drove this one guy who was completely normal, and then we get to his house, and he informs me that Molly was his cat's stage name. And I was like, that's a weird thing to say. I'm good. Please get out of the car. Like, we were doing so good. I had people that would tip me in weed. I also had someone during Comic-Con. If you see people during Comic-Con, they're all dressed up to the nines, right? And this girl had a 4-foot-long scythe, if you know what the Grim Reaper carries. It wasn't real, it was fake, but she has this like long scythe, and she decides she's gonna stick it out of the window of the car. So I'm just driving downtown San Diego with this scythe hanging out of my car. It was never a dull moment. It was very interesting times for me. But the one thing that they all had in common was this moment where they'd kind of give me a quick scan and they'd be like, "Are you my ride? Are you my Lyft driver, or am I waiting for another driver? And part of that was my fault because I really hated the Lyft, like, memorabilia. I hated the Lyft sticker they wanted us to put on the car. They used to give out pink mustaches. I was like, there's no way I'm putting that on my car. There was like a pink like light up light. I was like, I'm not doing that. So it was probably my fault. They're like, are you trying to kidnap me right now? But in today's passage, John is basically asking Jesus the same question. Are you the one who is to come? Or should we wait for another? So let's read the text together just one more time. It's going to be Matthew 11, 2 through 11. When John heard in prison what the Messiah was doing, he sent word by his disciples and said to him, are you the one who is to come, or are we to wait for another? Jesus answered them, go and tell John what you hear and see. Those who cannot see receive their sight. Those who cannot walk, walk. Those with a skin disease are restored. The dead are raised, and the poor have good news brought to them. And blessed is anyone who takes no offense at me. As they went away, Jesus began to speak to the crowds about John. What did you go out to see? A reed shaken by the wind? What then did you go out to see? Someone dressed in soft robes? Look at those who wear soft robes are in royal palaces. What then did you go out to see? A prophet? Yes, I tell you, and more than a prophet. This is the one about whom it is written, see, I am sending my messenger ahead of you, who will prepare your way before you. Truly, I tell you, among those born of women, no one has arisen greater than John the Baptist, yet the least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. So John is asking this question while he's in prison. And I feel like that's important for us to note for our story today. For those who don't know, I spent the summer in Nicaragua working for a nonprofit when I was 23 years old. It's a beautiful place, very underrated if you have never been. And something that we would do from time to time, I actually have some pictures because I was a media intern. I have a couple pictures I took while I was there. There was no shortage of inspiration. I was in charge of all the photography and videography. It doesn't really do it justice in this lighting, but just such a beautiful people, so welcoming, so curious. Loved soccer very much, even if the goal was just two sticks together as a goalpost. And it was a beautiful place, so lush. It's like a jungle, and I loved it there. I adored my time there. And one of the things we would do with American tourist groups while we were there is we would take them to tour a local political prison that had been used in the 1900s. It was called Fort Coyotepe. And it was originally used in 1912 because the U.S. was occupying Nicaragua like it did to a lot of Central American countries at that time. And it was built during the Battle of Coyotepe Hill. And then it was kind of hot potatoed, handed back and forth during the 1900s to a lot of different groups. During the Somoza dictatorship, if anyone knows that little history lesson for you, of course, a dictator that the U.S. had empowered in power there, which we always usually do. And then to a bunch of different political groups during that time, they would use that jail. And visiting this prison was always something that was very sobering for me. It was something I did a couple times throughout the summer, and it was always with a different group of people, but the conditions in this prison were terrible, right? And so I actually have some good pictures here. This is what it looked like, the top of it. It's kind of like that fort, like people would lean over with guns, look down into the valley below. And a lot of memorials. This was used really recently. This stopped being used in the 80s. So it's kind of scary when you look at the conditions, how recent something like that was used to detain people. So you would go into that little entrance there, and it was very dark. It was very damp when you were in there. This is kind of like what it looked like. You can see how wide it was. And this place held hundreds of prisoners, right? So there's no private accommodations. Everyone's just kind of cramped together in there. And if you're actually in the building, you can look down and there's shackles or little chains that still exist from where people were shackled, had to stand in the spot, right? So it's not a very wide hallway. It's not a very wide space where they were keeping so many different people. And prisoners had even scrawled something on the wall. It says, quiero morir, or I want to die. That is what was written on the wall. And some pipes were connected to where guards would use the restroom. So people would be in this giant cell with a mass of people, and then there would be actual feces and urine coming into the space where they were. And I remember something that stuck with me the most was that we would get to the belly of the prison, that center heart of it, where it was the darkest. And the tour guides always did an awesome job educating you on so many of these things. And they would kill their flashlight, and they would have everyone in the space kill their phone light, and it would just be pitch black. And this is where, like, the enemies of the regime were kept. The people that the regime hated the most were kept in this really dark space. And people would slowly lose their minds, because it's just you in the dark with nothing. And then whenever the guards felt like it, whether it was days or weeks or months or years afterward, they'd yank you into the light and you would lose your eyesight from being exposed to the sun so quickly, from being in the dark for so long. So this place was constructed for psychological and physical torture. It was meant to demean and to dehumanize. And the scary thing is, as I said, this place was not used that long ago, right? That's pretty recent, in my opinion. So we can only imagine then what John's experience must have been like in prison under the Roman Empire. Food was not provided. Clothes were not provided. Cells were overcrowded. Most of them were underground, like what I showed you. Light was scarce, and the whole setup, just like this prison, was meant to break you down physically, emotionally, psychologically. A couple more pictures there. And because nothing is really new, the wealthy got a slap on the wrist. They get house arrest, right? And if you don't have the money, well, that really stinks, because you get darkness, you get cold, you get starvation. So because I'm a sarcastic and snarky person, I kind of observe John's question to be that way. Dude, what's going on here? I'm kind of in a bad spot, right? Or maybe John's just genuinely curious. Maybe he's tired. He probably is. He's being honest in his humanness, and he's saying, are you the one? Or should we wait for another? And honestly, we know that question quite well today, don't we? We're not in prison, necessarily. But Advent is supposed to be this peaceful, candlelit season of waiting. But if we look at the world right now, what's going on? We have mass shootings and ICE raids and mass deportations and families being separated and people that are dying in prisons and detention centers. There's neighbors that are unhoused and unsafe. And genuinely, it can feel like Jesus never showed up at all. I feel like that sometimes. And I don't think we talk about that enough. What does it mean to wait for God in a world where so many people are in survival mode? What could Advent mean to a teenager whose parents are being detained or deported? To someone who can't afford their medication this year? Or maybe someone who won't even be safe in their own church this Christmas? What does waiting mean when you simply cannot afford to wait? John had a community that showed up for him while he was locked in prison. They fed him, they clothed him, they visited him. They kept him connected to the outside world. And they showed up for him, right? Another job that I used to have was working with previously incarcerated people, and the work was really challenging, but so meaningful. And I felt so honored that these people would share their stories with me, but so often it was these harrowing stories of what they experienced while incarcerated. And then once they were out, it's not like things are like magically better. It's like nobody wants to rent you an apartment. Nobody trusts you. Nobody wants to give you a job. And so now we recognize why the rate of recidivism, people get rearrested so often, because there's not a lot of places to go. And I remember I talked to this one guy, he became a good friend of mine, and he was released after 15 to 20 years. And he just described the day. I was like, what was that like? Like, were you excited? And he was like, no, I just didn't know what was going on. I got dropped off at a bus stop, and they were kind of like, go figure it out. They give you a little bit of money just to get to your next place, and then you go to a Target because you're like, I need to buy some clothes. I don't really have a lot of clothes. And you go, and you've been in prison for so long that you don't recognize technological advancements. You don't know how things work because nobody's telling you. So he's like, Molly, I couldn't figure out the tap on the debit card. I couldn't figure out the tap thing. And when you're a grown man, there's not a lot of people racing to help you. If I was a little kid, if I was an older lady, maybe I was a single mom, people want to help those people, but not a grown man who doesn't know how to use the tap on a debit card. And I just looked at him and I just said, you know, I don't think I could do it. The ways that you've become so resilient, that you kept going. And every single man or person that I talked to always said, I stayed connected to my community. That's how I kept going. the people that have also been incarcerated and understand my situation, the support groups that we built through the program we were working with, the people offering resources and holistic help, those are the people I stay connected to because otherwise I would not have made it. So a real Advent question is this: how do we become that type of community for people? And when John's disciples bring him the question, Jesus doesn't respond with doctrine. No. He says, go and tell John what you hear and what you see. Those who cannot see receive their sight. Those who cannot walk, walk. Those with a skin disease are restored. Those who cannot hear, hear. The dead are raised, and the poor receive good news. Jesus' answer is basically this: look at what showing up for other people does. Look at what it's done. And if you remember back to the sermon that I preached this past summer, Jesus' interactions with folks were life-changing, but they were always very action-oriented. He didn't just spew words at them, right? They were social. He restored people back to community, back to the dignity and the justice that they so deserved, right? And I feel like this is important to say, but the good news to the poor is not thoughts and prayers. It's not, we'll pray for you. We're good. It's not revival meetings that leave people hungry and unable to pay their rent. It's the type of love that moves us into action for others. People are meant to experience the gospel, experience it. And how do they experience it? With food? With belonging, with liberation, with dignity, with voice. That's what good news looks like in real life. The risk of this beautiful season of Advent that I've come to love so much in recent years as I've learned more about it is that we treat it like a time of passive waiting, like sitting back and lighting some candles and just hoping for the best till Christmas. But that's not the invitation that we receive. For those who are a bit more jittery and are like, I like to be a doer, I like to do stuff, it's good news, right? Because Advent is about participation. It's about joining God in the work of bringing about justice and peace. And just like John wouldn't survive without community showing up for him, the sad reality and truth is the most vulnerable among us will not survive without us showing up for them. People in prisons, people in detention centers, immigrants terrified of deportation, trans folks that are targeted by legislation, people in shelters and hospitals, kids that are scared and alone, families that are separated by systems that do not care about them. Caring for them, showing up for them. It's not icing on the cake. It's not something you do when you got the extra time. It's everything. It's the entire thing. And it shows that we get it. It's the gospel being lived out. And yeah, it's going to cost us something. That's the reality of the thing. John lost his freedom. And eventually, we know the rest of the story. John lost his life. We might lose friendships. You might lose a job opportunity. You might lose social comfort, and you're definitely going to lose proximity to power in this current day and age. But following Jesus always is going to draw us towards the marginalized, because that's where Jesus is. That's where he dwells. John sends messengers and asks, are you the one, or should we wait for another? And Jesus answers this life filled with liberation. So our Advent call is simple. Live like Jesus really came. Live like actions are stronger than words. Live like the kingdom, Jesus' kingdom, is for the marginalized people because it is. Because it is. I'm going to have Brent come up and do communion.
Thank you for that. I'm impressed. Thank you so much for opening those words to us.